Chapter 58. Her terror and fears for my fate led her to watch the rectory that evening. She saw the detective leave it and followed him to my residence. This she told me hurriedly when I perceived her, after digging my wife's grave in the plantation. She did not suspect what the sack contained. I am now about to enter on my normal condition. For people are almost always in their graves. When we survey the long race of men, it is strange, and still more strange to find, that they are mainly dead men, who have scarcely ever been otherwise. Aeneas Manston. The steward's confession, aided by circumstantial evidence of various kinds, was the means of freeing both Anne Seaway and Miss Aldclyffe from all suspicion of complicity with the murderer. 2. 6 o'clock p.m. It was evening just at sunset on the day of Manston's death. In the cottage at Tolchurch, was gathered a group consisting of Cytherea, her brother, Edward Springrove, and his father. They sat by the window conversing of the strange events which had just taken place. In Cytherea's eye there beamed a hopeful ray, though her face was as white as a lily. Whilst they talked, looking out at the yellow evening light that coated the hedges, trees, and church tower, a brougham rolled round the corner of the lane, and came in full view. It reflected the rays of the sun in a flash from its polished panels as it turned the angle, the spokes of the wheels bristling in the same light like bayonets. The vehicle came nearer, and arrived opposite Owen's door, when the driver pulled the rein, and gave a shout, and the panting and sweating horses stopped. Miss Aldclyffe's carriage! They all exclaimed. Owen went out. Is Miss Gray at home? Said the man. A note for her, and I am to wait for an answer. Cytherea read in the handwriting of the rector of Carriford. Dear Miss Gray, Miss Aldclyffe is ill, though not dangerously. She continually repeats your name, and now wishes very much to see you. If you possibly can, come in the carriage. Very sincerely yours, John Ronham. How comes she ill? Owen inquired of the coachman. She caught a violent cold, by standing out of doors in the damp, on the night the steward ran away. Ever since, till this morning, she complained of fullness and heat in the chest. This morning the maid ran in, and told her suddenly that Manston had killed himself in gaol. She shrieked, broke a blood vessel, and fell upon the floor. Severe internal hemorrhage continued for some time and then stopped. They say she is sure to get over it, but she herself says no, as he has suffered from it before. Cytherea was ready in a few moments, and entered the carriage. 3. 7 o'clock p.m. Soft as was Cytherea's motion along the corridors of Knapwater House, the preternaturally keen intelligence of the suffering woman caught the maiden's well-known footfall. She entered the sick chamber with suspended breath. In the room everything was so still, and sensation was as it were so rarefied by solicitude, that thinking seemed acting, and the lady's weak act of trying to live a silent wrestling with all the powers of the universe. Nobody was present but Mr. Ronham, the nurse having left the room on Cytherea's entry, and the physician and surgeon being engaged in a whispered conversation in a side chamber. Their patient had been pronounced out of danger. Cytherea went to the bedside, and was instantly recognized. Oh, what a change, Miss Aldclyffe, dependent upon pillows! And yet not a forbidding change. With weakness had come softness of aspect. The haughtiness was extracted from the frail thin countenance, and a sweeter mild placidity had taken its place. Miss Aldclyffe signified to Mr. Ronham that she would like to be alone with Cytherea. Cytherea? She faintly whispered the instant the door was closed. Cytherea clasped the lady's weak hand, and sank beside her. Miss Aldclyffe whispered again. They say I am certain to live. But I know that I am certainly going to die. They know, I think, and hope. " I know best, but we'll leave that. Cytherea, oh Cytherea, can you forgive me? " Her companion pressed her hand. But you don't know, yet you don't know yet, " the invalid murmured. It is forgiveness for that misrepresentation to Edward Springrove that I implore, and for putting such force upon him that which caused all the train of your innumerable ills. " I know all, and I do forgive you. Not in a hasty impulse that is revoked when coolness comes, but deliberately and sincerely. As I myself hope to be forgiven, I accord you my forgiveness now. " Tears streamed from Miss Aldclyffe's eyes, and mingled with those of her young companion, who could not restrain hers for sympathy. Expressions of strong attachment, interrupted by emotion, burst again and again from the broken-spirited woman. But you don't know my motive. Oh, if you only knew it, how you would pity me then. " Cytherea did not break the pause which ensued, and the elder woman appeared now, to nerve herself by a superhuman effort. She spoke on in a voice weak as a summer breeze, and full of intermission, and yet there pervaded it a steadiness of intention, that seemed to demand firm tones to bear it out worthily. "Cytherea," she said, "listen to me before I die. A long time ago, more than 30 years ago, a young girl of 17 was cruelly betrayed by her cousin, a wild officer of 26. He went to India, and died. One night when that miserable girl had just arrived home with her parents from Germany, where her baby had been born, she took all the money she possessed, pinned it on her infant's bosom, together with a letter, stating, among other things, what she wished the child's Christian name to be. Wrapped up the little thing, and walked with it to Clapham. Here, in a retired street, she selected a house. She placed the child on the doorstep and knocked at the door, then ran away and watched. They took it up, and carried it indoors. Now that her poor baby was gone, the girl blamed herself bitterly for cruelty towards it, and wished as he had adopted her parents' counsel to secretly hire a nurse. She longed to see it. She didn't know what to do. She wrote in an assumed name to the woman who had taken it in, and asked her to meet the writer with the infant at certain places she named. These were hotels or coffee houses in Chelsea, Pimlico, or Hammersmith. The woman, being well paid, always came, and asked no questions. At one meeting at an inn in Hammersmith she made her appearance without the child, and told the girl it was so ill that it would not live through the night. The news, and fatigue, brought on a fainting fit. Miss Aldclyffe's sobs choked her utterance, and she became painfully agitated. Cytherea, pale and amazed at what she heard, wept for her, bent over her, and begged her not to go on speaking. "Yes, I must," she cried, between her sobs. I must go on. And I must tell yet more plainly, you must hear it, before I am gone, Cytherea." The sympathizing, and astonished girl sat down again. The name of the woman who had taken the child was Manston. She was the widow of a schoolmaster. She said as he had adopted the child of a relation. Only one man ever found out who the mother was. He was the keeper of the inn in which she fainted, and his silence as he has purchased ever since. A 12-month passed 15 months and the saddened girl met a man at her father's house named Gray, your father, Cytherea, then unmarried. Ah, such a man! Inexperience now perceived what it was to be loved in spirit and in truth. But it was too late. Had he known her secret he would have cast her out. She withdrew from him by an effort, and pined. Years and years afterwards, when she became mistress of a fortune, and estates by her father's death, she formed the weak scheme of having near her the son whom, in her father's lifetime, as he had been forbidden to recognize. Cytherea, you know who that weak woman is. By such toilsome labor as this, I got him here as my steward. And I wanted to see him your husband, Cytherea, the husband of my true lover's child. It was a sweet dream to me, dot dot pity me, oh, pity me. To die unloved is more than I can bear. I loved your father, and I love him now. Apostrophe apostrophe, that was the burden of Cytherea Alcliffe. I suppose you must leave me again, you always leave me, apostrophe she said, after holding the young woman's hand a long while in silence. No indeed, I'll stay always. Do you like me to stay? Apostrophe, Miss Alcliffe in the jaws of death was Miss Alcliffe still, though the old fire had degenerated to mere phosphorescence now. But you are your brother's housekeeper? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, of course you cannot stay with me on a sudden like this. Dot dot go home, or he will be at a loss for things. And tomorrow morning come again, won't you, dearest? Come again, we'll fetch you. But you mustn't stay now, and put Owen out. Oh no, it would be absurd. Apostrophe, the absorbing concern about trifles of daily routine, which is so often seen in very sick people, was present here. Cytherea promised to go home, and come the next morning to stay continuously. Stay till I die then, will you not? Yes, till I die I shan't die till tomorrow. Apostrophe apostrophe, we hope for your recovery all of us. Apostrophe apostrophe, I know best. Come at 6 o'clock, darling. Apostrophe, as soon as ever I can, apostrophe returned Cytherea tenderly. But 6 is too early, you will have to think of your brother's breakfast. Leave Tolchurch at 8, will you? Apostrophe, Cytherea consented to this. Miss Alcliffe would never have known had her companion stayed in the house all night, but the honesty of Cytherea's nature rebelled against even the friendly deceit which such a proceeding would have involved. An arrangement was come to whereby she was to be taken home in the pony carriage instead of the brougham that fetched her, the carriage to put up at Tolchurch Farm for the night, and on that account to be in readiness, to bring her back earlier. 4. March the 30th. Daybreak, the third and last instance of Cytherea's subjection to those periodic terrors of the night which had emphasized her connection with the Alcliffe name and blood, occurred at the present date. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning when Cytherea, though most probably dreaming, seemed to awake, and instantly was transfixed by a sort of spell that had in it more of awe than of affright. At the foot of her bed, looking her in the face with an expression of entreaty beyond the power of words to portray, was the form of Miss Alcliffe, wan and distinct. No motion was perceptible in her, but longing, earnest longing, was written in every feature. Cytherea believed she exercised her waking judgment as usual in thinking, without a shadow of doubt, that Miss Alcliffe stood before her in flesh and blood. Reason was not sufficiently alert to lead Cytherea to ask herself how such a thing could have occurred. I would have remained with you, why would you not allow me to stay? Apostrophe apostrophe, Cytherea exclaimed. The spell was broken. She became broadly awake, and the figure vanished. It was in the gray time of dawn. She trembled in a sweat of disquiet, and not being able to endure the thought of her brother being asleep, she went and tapped at his door. Owen! Apostrophe apostrophe, he was not a heavy sleeper, and it was verging upon his time to rise. What do you want, Cytherea? Apostrophe apostrophe, I ought not to have left Knapwater last night. I wish I had not. I really think I will start at once. She wants me, I know. Apostrophe, what time is it? Apostrophe apostrophe, a few minutes past 4. Apostrophe apostrophe, you had better not. Keep to the time agreed upon. Consider, we should have such a trouble in rousing the driver, and other things. Apostrophe apostrophe, upon the whole it seemed wiser not to act on a mere fancy. She went to bed again. An hour later, when Owen was thinking of getting up, a knocking came to the front door. The next minute something touched the glass of Owen's window. He waited, the noise was repeated. A little gravel had been thrown against it to arouse him. He crossed the room, pulled up the blind, and looked out. A solemn white face was gazing upwards from the road, expectantly straining to catch the first glimpse of a person within the panes. It was the face of a Knapwater man sitting on horseback. Owen saw his errand. There is an unmistakable look in the face of every man who brings tidings of death. Gray opened the window. Miss Altcliffe. ... said the messenger, and paused. Ah, dead? ... yes, she is dead. ... when did she die? ... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.